In our current political climate, the word evangelical carries a reputation of political extremism, and since 2016, associations with Donald Trump. But American evangelicals weren't always characterized by right-wing nationalism. Our next guest is the author of a new book about why and how the politics of American evangelical movement evolved through the years to become what it is today. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the relationship between the evangelical Christian church and politics? Are you a practicing member of an evangelical denomination? And what do you think about how your church talks about politics? Maybe you've left a church because it was getting too political. You can call us 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Tim Alberta is an award-winning journalist, author, and staff writer for The Atlantic. His newest book is called The Kingdom, the Power, and the Glory: American Evangelicals in an Age of Extremism. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
You yourself have a strong background in the evangelical church. So tell us about the religion you grew up with and how ingrained it is in your personal being.
Yeah, I grew up in the EPC, the Evangelical Presbyterian Church, and my dad was the senior pastor. I grew up in Southeast Michigan outside of Detroit, and the church was very much core to my identity and my understanding of the world. And I think what I began to sense as I got older was that even as my personal relationship with and faith in Jesus grew stronger, my disillusionment with the church and my skepticism of the church was also growing in tandem. And there was just a sense that something felt off, that perhaps the mission of the church as I had understood it since I was a little boy, which was to take the gospel to all the nations and to make disciples and to draw closer to Christ, that was beginning to be crowded out in some sense by some of the culture warring, some of the politicking, and really some of the sort of obsession around the idea that America was itself under attack.
What was the original meaning of that word, evangelical, compared to what it means now?
Yeah, it's interesting. I write about this early in the book. You know, a few decades back, there was a book that was written on this very phenomenon where the author said that at one point, really, evangelical just referred to anyone who liked Billy Graham. And then someone followed up with Graham and asked him about it and asked him what he thought the word meant. And he said, you know, I'd like to know the answer to that myself. You know, really what evangelical was meant to always connote was that as opposed to more of the staid traditions of mainline Protestantism, that evangelicals were on fire for the Lord, that there was not only a literal interpretation of Scripture and a belief that the Bible is the living Word of God, not just a book about God, but the living, inspired Word of God, but that they had a responsibility to evangelize. And that was the verb that lived within that identifier. It was that you had an obligation to then take that gospel, that good news, and share it with the world, to evangelize people who did not know Jesus. And obviously, that as a commonly understood definition of evangelical has long since passed. What we've seen in the last couple of decades is really a full-scale evolution to the point where, or devolution perhaps, to the point where evangelical is now really synonymous with conservative, white, Republican, Trump supporter.
When in history do we begin to see this kind of shift where evangelicals have become more politically involved? Or has it always been this way in fits and starts?
You know, look, it's interesting. You know, at some level, you have to go back to the 4th century and the rule of Constantine and the embrace of Christianity with the power of the state to understand that there has always existed this temptation for Christians, to try to dominate the world around them and to try to grab the levers of power and use whatever resources they might have to not just follow Jesus as a matter of spiritual journey, but to use Jesus, to use the church as a means of ruling the world around them. That temptation has always been there. I think in the American context, what we see really in the mid to late 1970s is the successful marshaling of resources, and I would add the really effective mobilizing of tens of millions of conservative Christians around the country based on this idea that the country was changing so rapidly and that their values were under attack, and that if they didn't stand up and do something, then they were going to lose this country. And that if they lost this country, it would be a defeat not just for them, not just for their Judeo-Christian heritage, but that it would be a defeat for God himself. And those were the sort of existential stakes that many right-wing Christians began attaching to some of the culture wars, to some of the political debates. And they were hugely impactful and successful in doing so. But in the process, they sort of created this monster that we are now dealing with all these years later.
We're talking with Tim Alberta. He is a journalist and author. The new book is The Kingdom, the Power, and the Glory, American Evangelicals in an Age of Extremism. And the number to call to join in is 800-642-1234. We have Dan with us now from Wanakee, who has a question for you. Hi, Dan. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for the program. It's very interesting. question I have, I guess I just don't understand how come evangelicals are so behind Trump when he's been proven that he's a rapist, he's a bigot. I mean, we all know who he is, but yet they still want to follow someone like that. And how do we look to the rest of the world when we have someone like that? He's already dedicated that he wants to be a dictator. I don't understand it.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate that. And Tim, what do you think about that? I mean, Donald Trump doesn't really check the boxes when it comes to what we think of as a leader of the Christian church, right? So what is the allure there?
Well, the question that Dan's asking is a big one, and it's one that I try to address in the book. I think it's worth understanding that Trump's personal deficiencies, which were once viewed by many Christians as a real weakness for him, and they viewed him very suspiciously because of his personal backstory, it's now viewed as a strength in many ways, and I'll explain why. You know, if you subscribe to this idea that your idealized America is under assault, and that if you lose one more election, you might not get it back, you believe that the barbarians are at the gates and that they are closing in, you start to think to yourself, well, maybe we need a barbarian to protect us. And that really helps to explain the Trump phenomenon here with evangelicalism in a nutshell. In other words, the fact that Trump is not a pious and virtuous Christian man, in some ways that is his superpower, because it frees him to act in ways, to talk in ways, to do and say things that no good Christian ever would. And I think for a lot of churchgoers who were at one point and maybe even still are uncomfortable with Trump's behavior, I think they have come to view him as almost a mercenary figure, that he can do the dirty work for them that they cannot do for themselves. And that really, I think, is the mentality when I've met with people all around the country who will tell you at great length about all of their objections to his behavior and his rhetoric, and then they'll stop and explain that, well, they're still going to vote for him because maybe he's the only one who can save us from the abyss. He's the only one strong enough or crazy enough to go fight our enemies on the left. And I think that is really the mindset that dominates much of modern evangelicalism.
Where do you think it comes from, this kind of sense that the church is under attack, that the American way of life is under attack?
Well, listen, if you are a white, conservative, Christian born in the 1950s or 1960s. I mean, you look around and obviously the world has changed significantly. The country demographically looks very differently than it did then. The country's sort of core values and messaging and its institutional norms are much different. The consumption of media, there's no question that the country is less guided by and informed by sort of basic Judeo-Christian morals today relative to 50 years ago. But that raises the question of, okay, if that is in fact the case, if there is some sort of, you know, social societal backsliding at work here, is the way to fight back against that by allying yourself with the thrice married, casino owning, you know, parade your mistresses through the tabloids, pay off porn stars presidential candidate? Or is it to hold yourself to an even higher standard? And I think that is the heart of the contradiction here, that there's obviously some truth to the idea that the culture and that the country has moved away from Christianity. But the response to that from many in the evangelical world has been to go even further in embracing rhetoric and behavior from their leaders that does not at all reflect on Jesus, and it does not point people towards the church. And that creates this sort of zero-sum, mutually assured destruction environment that we're living in now.
We're talking with journalist and author Tim Alberta about his new book, The Kingdom, the Power, and the Glory, American Evangelicals in an Age of Extremism. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you grow up in the evangelical church? And how has it changed politically since you were young? How has your religion impacted your political beliefs? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Shereen Seward in for Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up the conversation with journalist and author Tim Alberta about his new book, The Kingdom, the Power, and the Glory, American Evangelicals in an Age of Extremism. You can call, too, and weigh in with your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Are you a practicing evangelical Christian? Do you think evangelicals are misrepresented or misunderstood? If you've left the church, why did you leave? And does your experience in the church inform your political beliefs? Call in 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm curious about church leadership and the role that they play here. How does church leadership contribute to the political changes in the evangelical church?
Well, it's interesting. You know, in my experiences, and I, for the book, spent about 4 years traveling to churches all around the country and talked with hundreds of pastors, visited hundreds of churches, and much of what you see is actually the in terms of the tension and the polarization and the radicalization, it's coming from the bottom up. In other words, in many of these places, you have the pastors and the elders, the church leaders, who are just trying to sort of keep a lid on things and trying to survive what has been an incredibly tumultuous 5 or 6 years, and really probably even more like a decade now. And what they are trying to do is figure out a way to both hold together church congregations that are splitting over politics and over culture and social issues, while also trying to faithfully and biblically disciple their people and not shy away from the challenges of this moment. And it's really hard to do both of those things simultaneously. Now, I will say that in many other church settings I've visited, and I document these in the book, there have been pastors who have effectively weaponized the idea of, you know, being anti-government, being anti-vaccine, you know, subscribing to conspiracies around, QAnon and this election being stolen as a means of growing their congregations. Because what they know is that in these past 4 or 5 years, there have been these exoduses away from churches where the members of certain congregations who have been agitating for more politics and more kind of God and country Christian nationalism from the pulpit. When they haven't gotten it from their pastors, they have left those churches and they've gone looking for it elsewhere. And so what you've seen is this kind of boomtown cottage industry where a lot of churches that were really small just 4 or 5 years ago have suddenly exploded in size, exploded in popularity, exploded in revenues, and have become kind of mega churches almost overnight simply because of the kind of blood and soil militant approach they have taken using the church as kind of a staging ground in the culture wars. And that has really been seen across the country. Whenever I drop into a community and talk with some local pastors, without fail, they've been able to point me to a local example of this. So it is happening at some scale now.
Let's go to the phones. We have Deborah with us from Madison. Deborah, thank you so much for calling. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I don't have a question, just a few comments.
Sure.
I have some family members that are really involved in the Christian right. And I, you know, my own observation is just the amount of denial and fear, and what the gentleman was just talking about regarding, this weaponization, just it's so powerful. And I know from my own family, it seems like people went from one extreme in their life to another. And I think a lot of people are looking for something because they've come from a broken situation.
That's interesting. Thanks, Deborah. What did you think about what Deborah said, Tim?
Well, listen, we are all looking for something. I think obviously the debate around God, around a higher power, has raged for millennia. It will continue to rage, and there's no question that some people come to the church because they are hurting and lost and in search of something bigger than themselves, and they might find it. I think the dilemma is that, you know, if in fact you do find it, if in fact you come to believe that Jesus was the Son of God and that God became man and took on flesh to serve as a sacrifice and to atone for the sins of man, and that you might be reconciled to God if you believe in Jesus and if you follow him faithfully. Once you begin to believe that, and once you commit yourself to that lifestyle, there's no ambiguity in what you are called to do and who you are called to be. It does not become optional to just sort of do this as a habit or to pick it up and put it down as some sort of a hobby. This is a fundamental identity that you are to take on. And the problem is, for far too many Christians, in my view, from my research and from my reporting, the Christian identity has become just sort of something that exists at the periphery, and their true identity has become far more rooted in their politics, far more rooted in their country, far more rooted in the expression of antagonism towards enemies, real and perceived, who they might seek to subjugate, rather than in the ideals of Christ, who teaches us to love our enemies and to pray for those who persecute us and to turn the other cheek. The teachings of Jesus are really non-negotiable, and yet far too much of the Christian world, because of that fear, because of this panic or this sense of impending doom, they have chosen to jettison those teachings of Jesus in an attempt to hold on to something that they feel is being taken from them. And that is, I think, the great tragedy here.
We only have about a minute left, but I want to take Jeff's call here. Jeff in Superior, thank you so much for calling. Jeff, hi. Very briefly.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. I just want to ask a theological question. Do you think the flood during Noah's time was a defeat for God? Do you think Christ dying on the cross was a defeat for God? You said something earlier about if Trump loses the election, evangelicals are going to think, oh, it's a defeat for God. I think you're misled. I don't think that's true.
Thank you, Jeff. What do you say to that, Tim?
The answer theologically is that no, that those things that he asked me about were very much a part of God's design for the ages. At least that is what my biblical exegesis teaches me. And I'm not clear when he says that he thinks I'm mistaken, whether he thinks that my analysis is mistaken or my interpretation. But what I shared earlier in terms of those people believing that is something that I quote many folks at great length talking about in my book. That is from the horse's mouth. That is something that I am sharing as a reflection of the reporting I've done. So I would invite Jeff perhaps to read the book or read one of the excerpts that's online so that he might see the idea fully fleshed out rather than just the radio clip.
Tim, I want to thank you for joining us. I think we could have talked for 2 hours and had plenty to say.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Tim Alberta is a journalist, author, and staff writer for The Atlantic. We talked with him about his book, The Kingdom, the Power, and the Glory, American Evangelicals in an Age of Extremism.